Hi, I'm Tracy Koga, and thanks for downloading this podcast from ilikehugh.com. If you can, give us a follow or a subscribe. And remember that all the information about the guests in today's episode can be found at ilikehugh.com. Now, let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Hugh Virtual Chat. Well, I can actually say officially my dad is vaccinated, so I am so happy. you know, that seems to be like the biggest conversation going around town, but there's so many other things happening. And I want to welcome all of you. Kirsten, thank you. Representing Robin and Charlotte today. Yeah. Thanks for coming. Amy, so good to see you. And Maureen, too, as well. And thank you, Tina, for coming. There's going to be, oh, there's Linda. Oh, my goodness, I love your earrings, Linda. Yeah. Oh, they're so good. I have to describe them, too, because we're doing a podcast, too. Are they red? They're just long and dangly, and they look great.
No, they're like a coral. Like, oh, okay. They are matching my nails.
Oh, your nails. Wow. Hey, well, I was inspired by your lavender nails, so I've got lavender. All right, so I am going to actually start a little bit heavy, and I think we'll come back to it, and then we'll get into some light music stuff with my good friend Maureen. But right now, I know that Tina, you have to leave, but there has been so much ugliness. Best way to describe it. And again, just on Monday, some more shootings. And so I really want to talk about, though, the racism that's out there, and especially towards the Asian communities. And then again, too, there were some instances people have come forward now and talking about it. And I guess, Tina, my thing is to, just as the Asian culture and talking about mental health and stress and everything, we don't talk about it, you know, and I think it's like we have to change. And how do we do that? And also with respect, because that also is part of the Asian culture too, is respect for the elders and respect for your parents. So Tina, I guess, you know, explain a little bit on I guess, this whole racism, and, you know, is it xenophobia too?
Yeah, thank you for having me again today. And I'm really sorry, everyone, that I have to leave at noon. Unfortunately, I have like a standing meeting at noon every Tuesday. So whenever I come to join you, I have to leave early, which I always wish I could just stay and, you know, be part of the full conversation. But I'm really glad just to, you know, be in this space with all of you and kind of talk through what's going on around us. And, you know, as it's been, you know, not just this week, but I think, you know, Asian communities have been feeling the ways that more public displays of racism seem to have, you know, felt like they were, could be expressed more openly throughout COVID, and have been kind of, you know, responding to that. But, you know, as you were saying, Tracy, these aren't new. And I think this is where some of those issues of kind of silence that you were talking about for so long, particularly in the East Asian communities, there's been a whole kind of practice and intergenerational kind of movement to be a so-called model minority, to, you know, to keep trying to uplift yourself, to stay quiet, to keep your head down, not to speak out against things. And that, you know, this moment is seeing the shifts, but also the way that in those when voice hasn't been used, the way that racism continues to be part of it. And the shootings in Atlanta, I think, have, you know, once again, been an impetus. Violence, extreme violence seems to be an impetus for bringing kind of, you know, a bit of a magnifying glass onto the issues. But they're again, they're not new. And I think what we're seeing, particularly with the, you know, those 8 murders, that we're seeing a kind of, at the intersection, we're seeing misogyny, we're seeing racism, and we're seeing racial fetishization. And so, you know, when we look at the media and the way it immediately kind of responded and gave voice to a white suspect, a white male suspect, and allowed him to narrate the story and make the women invisible. And even within media, trying to parse out, you know, who was engaged in sex work, who wasn't, and trying to clean it up a little bit for us. Who were we going to be comfortable enough talking about this? And I think what we really need to think about are, what are the conditions of labor for people? What have they been doing? And how does this whole idea that Asian women are somehow a source of contaminating sexuality, that they're a danger to a whiteness. And so we see all of this coming forward. And I think, you know, it's again, it's not a new situation, but it certainly has highlighted where we're at and the kinds of everyday dangers that people kind of encounter or how they're just seen. So yeah, I think I'll just start there and happy to continue this conversation with everybody.
I mean, what is it like here in our own city? I know that there was a woman, you know, that had terrible things, you know, written on her car, and like several times, I mean, had, you know, encounters with this. How do we respond? I you know, and correct me if I'm gonna jump in, ladies, like we had talked about this, when we see someone being, you know, attacked, maybe not physically, but verbally. You know, Susie says, you know, you need to be that barrier and step in front. But pure honesty, you know, I would have to judge the whole situation and evaluate that before I would boldly step forward. So I guess what I'm asking all of you is, like, you know, is there a solution? What would you do? How would you, you know, dissipate the situation if you were, you know, around someone being confronted?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Tracy, there's so much, you know, and I think, again, it goes to our own sense of safety. And, you know, I know in this group, we've talked so much about how, you know, when you occupy a place of privilege, and that's always a kind of, you know, it's always contextual. So there are times when any one of us on here, you know, can be in a position to step in, and other times where our own sort of embodied being is, puts us in danger as well and makes it more difficult. And, you know, as most of you know, I teach history at the University of Manitoba. So in my line, my answer is often, you know, we need to learn more and we need to listen. And I'm, you know, especially in this last week, I've just been reflecting so much on how so few of us have any understanding of the conditions of work in places like massage parlors. What are the conditions of immigration and migration? So what allows people, and what are the conditions that mean that people live and work in these spaces, and that that is the only way that they kind of experience this country? So how, why don't we take the time to learn and think about that kind of labor and that work that's being done? And, you know, how we critically engage even questions of, you know, a lot of immediate responses were more policing. And what we're hearing from the communities is no policing, less policing. That's actually part of the source of violence against us. How do we think about protection that's community-based? And, you know, I think in Winnipeg, all of these conversations have to also engage us with, you know, with missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. I think the way that racialized violence and the sexualization of women happens. Our city, you know, when I look at that case, I think this is not just about the erasure of certain people's bodies, but there is a real kind of, you know, it's not the same experience, but there is a kind of way that they intersect together. And I think the communities need to work together to begin to think about that. What are the responses and how do we really give community voice rather than continue to kind of allow what is really just a really broad cultural, political, and legal framework around racial fetishization to continue to perpetuate our discomfort in talking about the situations, because unless we take time to learn about violence, we also are only really able to address the violence in certain realms. And it's, you know, cross-country, and the most vulnerable are the ones we hear from least.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I think it was told to me too, and it does make sense. We're human beings, but when we don't understand, it's so easy to go against, or you know, and or you know, to get your back up on, and you know, and maybe that's how racism starts, is, you know, just not wanting to understand and just thinking that my way is the best way. I'm gonna go to Amy and go to Linda.
I want to answer your question quickly first, Tracy. Yeah. Thank you, Tina, for that great insight. But you had asked a question, Tracy, would we speak up?
Yeah.
And I think, Tina, you made the good point. It's for coming from a white woman's perspective, a position mm-hmm. of privilege, I always have to check myself and say, why is my discomfort more important than somebody's safety? You know, mm-hmm. to really examine that. Is, you know, and that's often the reason given for not speaking up in mm-hmm. in all sorts of situations. I was uncomfortable. I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to get it wrong. You know, I was worried what people would think. All of those are, we have to reposition those mm-hmm. as less important than somebody's safety and dignity and respect and right. So, mm-hmm. you know, that was, you had said the word discomfort, Tina. So that just reminded me, I wanted to respond to your question, Tracy.
Well, thank you. Yes, you're right. Amy.
I agree, Tina, Linda, great question, Tracy. It is a lot of discomfort. And I find that with the events, I'm stuck with that too. I was brought up learning to accept and to work harder than others to get those opportunities. And now I need to unlearn that so I can project bravery in front of my daughter, my family, my community, where we are faced with racism. And we're finally talking about it. And I'm hopeful for the future. Like mm-hmm. my heart goes out to all those who do not feel like it's been an even playing field. I haven't been able to respond because it is a lot to process, and mm-hmm. I want to gather like my thoughts. It's disheartening to hear that there's a Chinese virus. It's disheartening to hear what's going on in the Asian communities around us. It's disheartening to not know what to do. Like I said, my upbringing was based on forging forward to accept and never to compare myself to those who are less fortunate because I have it good. And it didn't dawn on me until the recent events that I recognize that I feel like I don't have a right to speak up because there are others who are being tremendously impacted, and who am I to chime in? And there's been topics on cancel culture, accountability, microaggressions, reverse racism. And I already have the feeling of being at the bottom of the food chain, and if I politely express my feelings, I feel like I won't be heard.
I know.
And, right? And even like growing up, I thought that dyeing my hair blonde, that did happen. With contact lenses, that I would be protected from injustice. I thought bringing a sandwich or a pizza pop for lunch, that I can be Canadian. But I still get those little comments. Oh, you must be great with numbers. I'm tall for an Asian, or you mix, you look exotic, or how Chinese are you? Like, what do you mean, how Chinese am I? I am privileged. Like, my parents did own an established restaurant in the heart mm-hmm. of Chinatown, where people didn't call me by my first name. I was known as the Asian dim sum chick wherever I went. And they would call it across the room. So regardless of what I do, I am told I am not Canadian. And here's the thing, like when we survey people prior to revamping our old restaurants. So many restaurants now adopt an Asian influenced dish. They can charge premium for it. Maybe people are willing to pay $25 or more for a Kung Pao rice bowl that doesn't have the authenticity if you were to order at a local Chinese restaurant. Probably a family restaurant bringing you the flavors from their hometown. If a Chinese restaurant increased their prices, it's perceived as expensive because Chinese food is already seen as cheap, undervalued. And that's essentially where we stand. We can't make it a high value item unless it's supported. And same goes with racism. It's something that we need to do together to be on an even playing field. That's just a little tidbit of
oh my goodness. Oh, Amy, that's what I love. You're just like, okay, you've made racism like as it is, comparing it to a Chinese menu, and that you're so true. Like how many times or whatever they raise it a dollar or whatever, and it's just like highway robbery. And you're going, but then I'll go to X restaurant and pay, yeah, you're right, $25 for a bowl of rice and some soy sauce in it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's, oh my goodness. Anyways, and welcome, Rana. I love that pink sweater. Oh, you're on mute. Yeah, you're on mute.
Hi.
Oh, there you go. Now we can hear you. Yes. So what are your thoughts on things that have been happening around us besides COVID and besides vaccines?
Oh. Yeah, so I think, it's a very layered conversation, and I'm always in this position where, I'm never surprised, and I kind of feel, do people actually understand that this racism has been happening for years and years and years? I guess on the positive end, I'm happy that this is now becoming in the forefront and people are like the general public is able to see what Asian, East Indian, Arab, I know that there was a issue in Calgary yesterday where a girl got ripped, her hijab got ripped off and she got beaten up because she was like, whatever. So this stuff is happening. Like it's really happening. And I think it's really positive that people now, general public is talking about it. But I get kind of iffy and a little alarmed that people are so surprised about it. I was somewhere last night and they were like, well, I didn't know that would possibly ever happen. I'm like, are you joking? Like, what world are you living in? Just because now it becomes mainstream, it does not mean that this is suddenly a new issue. And I think that is really important for us to clarify. It's becoming public. I think that there are issues with reporting acts of racism, specifically in different cultures and different groups of people. I know a lot of Muslim people will not actually report when something is happening to them or they're facing a hate crime. Amy said a really positive thing or a really important thing. And I know that there's a restaurant in Winnipeg that serves, East India food. And I know they're dealing with the same issue that, you can go to any other restaurant basically, and they can put a premium on something that is basically you have built from scratch from your own stories and your own history. Like we all carry certain recipes and stuff like that throughout our world. And if you go to them, they literally face the same issue, right? So it's a really sad state of events. But my main point is this isn't something new at all. I think to act like it is something new or to go sit for me to sit in a group of people and for them to be alarmed that this is happening, I think it's kind of icky. Like, let's be realistic. If we're starting to have these conversations about race, about racism, about attacks on different people, let's be honest about the history of it. Let's be honest about how and when or the different ways it has been occurring. I think language is very powerful as well. And just to Amy's point, I think, I was listening to something last night And I actually wrote to one of my friends, I wrote him an email, and I was just like, this is so crazy, because I recognize language. Like, I know that there's certain words in certain languages that don't actually exist in English, right? And I think that anyone who comes from a different world or different language, we recognize that. But I just want to relate the language to the racism and the violence, right? Like those violent acts of racism. You know, the English language, if you really think about it, it is rooted in many ways in violence, right? So, you know, violence and misogyny and like these issues. Like, I was listening to this podcast, and I read this article this woman wrote, and I can't remember her name, and I wish I could give her credit for this, but she was talking about, you know, when people would just say, like, when, you know, a guy will be like, oh, I begged her, you nailed it. You like, they use very violent terms, to almost in a celebratory way. Right. And I think that, so all of these things are interconnected. Right. And I think that, you know, for racial issues and for violence, and I'm only thinking about violence because of that Calgary attack, actually, mm-hmm. That's what's kind of in my mind right now, is this girl getting beaten the shit out of for wearing a hijab. But yeah, so I just think that everything's interconnected. And if I was going to leave with one thing, cause I'm going to jump off pretty quick today. It's really, you know, can we just be honest about this isn't something new? Like, can we just have that conversation and stop pretending? Like, can I go and sit with a group of people and then being like, well, I've never dealt with that. I've never seen that. I couldn't believe that. What? Like, what? You know, just because you don't hear about it doesn't mean it's not happening. You know, and to the people who are facing it, no matter, regardless of what you are, I mean, for me, you know, always in solidarity with our Asian, with the Asian community and whoever's dealing with these issues, you know, 100%. But let's not be afraid. Some of the power is in reporting. Like, let's get the information out there, right? Like, when you're facing with it, I think that people get really scared. And I've talked to a few people just like this past week about some of these things. And there's a lot of fear in making it known. Like, there's a lot of fear in having those conversations, unless it's so violent that you actually have to seek medical help. Right. The girl walking down the street being called names, she's going to really hold it in, but she's not going to go actually report it. Right. She's not going to go and make it known as a statistic or a number or what's actually happening in the city. And I think a really good part of it, a really important part of it, so people, the general public, can know what's actually happening, is let's start having those really open, honest, unfiltered conversations. You know, stop tiptoeing around it. Stop trying to, you know, not offend people. There's a point in time where there's groups who have been oppressed for generations. We have the right to offend people. Like, you know, and our problem is not your offense. Like, I don't really care about your offense. Right now, I think the goal should be safety, security, making people feel like they are belonged, making feel like people feel like they can walk down the street and not be called the coronavirus or whatever, you know, like these BS terms that are being used. And so for me, I'm always on that end. I'm kind of a no bullshit kind of person. I'm just done with it. I think that we just need to flip switch a bit. Let's start talking about things openly, honesty. Let's start building bridges amongst communities, amongst groups of people. You know what I mean? You know, I don't speak for every Muslim community, but I definitely speak for me and my family. You know, I'm in complete solidarity with the Chinese community or any Asian community that is dealing with any racism. Like, let's wake up. And if you want a better world tomorrow, to be honest, for children who are much more, they have much more access to information, and their tomorrow is going to look very different than ours looks right now, let's just stop the tiptoeing around issues. Blunt, open, have very honest conversations. This is not something new. It's been happening for years. Let's just break it. Break it. And if we have to start fresh, let's do that. That's my 5 minutes of time. And I apologize for having to jump off soon.
That's okay. But, you know,
I'm like everybody else, you know, like we're just kind of all holding it in, like just being like, well, what do you even say at this point? Right?
No.
It is across the board. So it's kind of gross.
No.
So.
Well, it's nice, though, that we can have these conversations. So I just want to quickly, because I know Tina and then I guess Ronnie have to leave. So it was really weird. I was with my father just before racing here back home to do the show at a doctor's appointment. And we hopped on an elevator. We wanted to go down. The elevators are very slow, so we hopped on the one. It was going up, and there is one gentleman, white gentleman. I'm with my elderly dad, and so, you know, I get him in there, and I, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I seriously, you could cut that tension with a knife. I felt, so I made kind of a joke. I said, oh, we're just coming along for a ride. I know that it'll go, and he kind of looked, and I said, don't worry, it'll go to your floor first, so. And I said, yeah, the elevators are really slow, and kind of, you know, laughed, but not a word from him. Nothing. And so that's why, you know, it was so nice. It's so nice to be able to have that conversation because you know what, normally I would never feel anything, nothing, but just really a very, very peculiar silence. And it's sad. So anyways, I guess by talking, and before Tina leaves, what can we do for the as a community as a whole? I know we're having conversations, and I don't know, maybe I would love more people to come in, women to come in especially, and come into these conversations, but what can you specifically, number one, have that family conversation? I don't know.
For me, I think it's, it's the conversations. I think as Rana says, it's actually, being open and asking people if those who say this seems new, or mm-hmm. they've never seen it, or they haven't experienced it, to actually say, well, what privilege allows you to have not seen how racism operates every day in every encounter? And it's everything from Amy saying, where they're like, oh, there's the dim sum check, right? Like, what do they mean by that? Or any of these kinds of ways. So what is it that allows you to have a buffer around, seeing racism mm-hmm. and microaggressions and real violence in various ways? And, just because, the Atlanta events are so on top of my mind, and, in their relationship to Winnipeg, asking ourselves, what is it also, that allows us to think that people in different socioeconomic conditions who live differently, that their lives are less valuable? So that we want, who do we think we should listen to? And I think in this moment, we really have to push ourselves to say, we also have to disrupt all our ideas about, who's respectable and who isn't, and who we should listen to, and understand that these are all part of systemic racism. They're the way that misogyny, sexism, all come together, and that we have to actually, push ourselves to listen and look around the world differently, not just everybody else, but, I think all of ourselves asking, where's our own privilege? And so what do we see and not see? And, what do we have to do differently if we're going to really, provide space for voices and address violence?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you know what? And you said it too before, Tina, we have to start learning about other people, other cultures. We really do. And I mean, Maureen's sitting there. I mean, yes, she's with the Human Rights Museum. And, that can be such a great gathering place, I think, Maureen, for communities. And I think, too, it's like we need to have a safe place, too, as well. But maybe one day, yes, Rana, you can walk into that conversation and people will get it, right? And I think that's what you're saying is just, and I realize, and that makes you, what does that make you? Yeah, like you're sitting there and you're kind of pretending, right? And it eats away at you. So anyways, I know that, Tina, thank you so much. Let's continue this conversation. I would love some of your friends, to come in this, because this conversation isn't going to go away anytime soon. And I would love to learn more about the massage parlors and all of that, and to really understand what is going wrong, what is going right, and how we can all kind of come to some sort of cohesive kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but an understanding, a respect, because that's all certainly very lacking. And we're all, we all have our role to play. So thank you so much. So now, on a lighter note, Drum roll, please.
Can I?
Oh, yeah. Go.
I was just going to weigh in quickly because I absolutely love, I love everything that's being put forth and the insight and perspectives. I love the conversation that you talked about, Rana, about having the hard conversations. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to not swear because Robin would swear, but I'm not going to swear. But just calling it, right? Like calling it and not being afraid to have those uncomfortable conversations, and also being in a place where you're completely vulnerable. And as somebody that, you know, is white and privileged and very appearance-wise screams that, putting yourself in a place where you ask what that looks like for somebody, and you unlayer things, and you aren't afraid of offending because you don't want to say the wrong thing. So just say it. So I love the fact that you said that, and it's time we start having a lot more conversation. And then Tina was also talking about, you know, the change comes from the community. Tracy, you brought up is there more policing required? What's required? It's the community and the conversation in the community that's going to foster the change. And being vulnerable and putting myself out there. I'll do it right now, and I'll tell you the conversation we had. And I don't know a whole lot about the shooting, except for the kind of Cole's notes. But sitting with my adult children last night, my husband, my daughter was bringing it up, and talk about our biases coming up, because she's like, okay, so let's play a little game before we learn more. Who do you think it is? White, male, overweight, lives alone, nicest guy on the street. There's our biases, right? Like we were playing this game of, oh, Wayne, here it comes. And then we looked a little bit more, and we were, I hate to say it, but anyways, so there's, I have to get my biases in check, because that's exactly where my head went, right? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that. And also my heart goes out to the entire community. Heartbreaking. And talking about when we don't understand, when Tina was talking about how people work and live just to survive and put food on the table, and the lack of options that certain communities have, newcomers to, mm-hmm. to Canada trying to survive. When we don't understand, it's so easy to pass judgment. And I see that in the mental health world, working with families all the time, lack of understanding, judgment. And we need to understand, we need to understand before we speak, and we need to stop with assumptions. Yeah. That's just my way in on that subject.
No, those are all so true. Thank you, Kirsten. And I mean, the mental health issue is critical. But I want to kind of move on, kind of switch gears, because I asked Maureen to join us today, and she's got a different hat on. I would see her name in the news all the time in these little stories, and there were awesome stories. It's all about bringing music back to school. So it is the school bands. And, you know, it took like a group of parents. Am I correct, Maureen, that actually sounded the horn? Sorry about the pound.
I think we as parents did have a big role. Just before we leave the previous topic, though, I just wanted to tell you that an email has just crossed my desk in my professional capacity, alerting people that this Saturday there is going to be a honkathon rally. In response to the Atlanta shooting. It's being organized by collective community members from the local Chinese community. And again, it's just trying to grab attention and raise awareness. And I agree that the whole issue revolves around making sure that we're having conversations and noticing, because I think the Atlanta shooting made it all too clear how you can dismiss racism, fail to recognize racism. There's so much talk about, was it racist or wasn't it racist? And I agree with Tina that we see that same issue happening here with Asian communities and also with Indigenous communities, and especially with women, right, who mm-hmm. are the most vulnerable often. And so if you are a sex worker, you're further disadvantaged because you're exploited potentially by men or primarily men who are running those kinds of things. So it's all layered. I think I heard Rana say layered. So So I really like it, the fact that, and even on a personal level, I mean, I have had since high school a friend whose mother, no, father is of East Indian descent, and never thought anything of it. But only recently, in response to all the Black Lives Matter and everything, has she told me that she's experienced racism in her life. And I feel sad that I didn't know that. And I think it's up to people who have white privilege to ask their friends and acquaintances about whether or not they've experienced racism, because I don't think it's fair to expect them to raise it. I think it's the responsibility of the people on their side, of the allies.
Yeah.
So that's that.
And
so this is a very happy story, because I think it shows that you can have things happen as parents. So I first want to talk about banned kids, because I think anyone who's got kids in band or knows about GAND, or even the stereotype of banned kids, and every stereotype, there's a grain of truth, right? So a lot of them are not sort of your most popular kids at school. They're not the jocks. They're not the ones who go out and have big parties. They get all of their validation, I guess, and their sense of belonging and their feelings of self-esteem, and they're socialized from band, a lot of them. That's their family. That's where they have a community and they belong. So when band stopped and the wind instruments weren't playing anymore, it didn't just end their musical development and a chance to play music. It ended, for some of them, everything. And with my son, who was shy and tended just to hang around his base in his bedroom a lot, band brought him a whole group of friends. He was coming out of his shell. He was going on trips. He was going out with friends. And then that all ended back into the room. So this started with a parent from Vincent Massey High School, actually, who felt similarly, same issue with her daughter. And she started agitating, collecting up names of parents. We got our band teacher sort of asked us if we wanted to join this group, and then they backed out because they couldn't be involved. And what we found out through the Manitoba Band Association is there's really no reason for the kids not to be playing wind instruments. That the research that's been going on considerably in the United States is showing things like tuba, which my son plays, projects aerosols no more than breathing, actually less than breathing, that most instruments in a band project about the same as speaking. And only the trumpet and a couple of other ones project a little bit farther. So they'd be like talking or shouting. I should say. And then a lot of other research into when you take mitigation measures like bell covers over the instruments and other things, that there's really, the risk has come down to very minimal. And actually the big risk is just going to school in the first place. That's your risk, right? So actually playing in band, socially distanced with bell covers on, nice ventilated room, very little risk, but it wasn't happening. Meanwhile, my kid's doing volleyball in gym class with masks on, so that drives me crazy. So we started agitating, right? We wrote letters to the province, and because I have, my career is in media relations, I started reaching out to media. We managed to get coverage on the front page of the Free Press. We got on CTV and Global. We got CGOB, and then at the same time, coincidentally, the Manitoba Music Educators Association, so the band teachers sort of representatives, were talking behind the scenes with the province as well. So I think it was a week ago Friday, suddenly the province comes out with a bulletin, and this was only 3 weeks after we started our lobbying efforts, that they're lifting the restrictions on indoor wind instruments in schools. So my kids started playing in band a few days ago, and we're like, thrilled, because he's in grade 12. This would have been his last chance to play. They haven't played for over a year now in any band ever. That's what you do, when that's your passion in life, can you imagine? Like, it's not something you can do on yourself. So we're so thrilled.
Oh, wow. And then, you obviously have seen a difference in him now since he's joined the band again?
Yes, and in fact, on Saturday night, he went out with some friends from... Actually, there was friends from grade 12 last year, but band friends, right? So it's just sort of re-engaged the whole interest in everything.
Wow.
So really, really great. And the band teachers were worried, because enrollment in band for next year was looking very risky, because if your kids just aren't playing in band, lose that interest in band, they've got other options, right? And then they don't even know if they're going to be playing in the fall. Why are they going to pick band over art or whatever else they could be taking? So that was a problem too. And in Pembina Trail School Division, where I am, they've got such an amazingly good reputation for music excellence. Like, some of the bands in the high schools there are like symphony orchestras are unreal. And so you don't want to lose that.
No. How's it been, like, I guess, for going back into schools and stuff like that for your son? I mean, was it, and how did you feel too?
Fine. And in fact, there's, I think, very, very early in the pandemic, when they first started going back, there was like one case we heard about. Nothing ever really came of it. Haven't heard anything since then. He's not scared. They go every second day, and they sort of try their best to do all the things that you need to do to stay apart. But you know what? They're walking in the halls. They're young. They're, like I said, they're doing gym class, and still nothing's happening. So I don't know. Like, I think the danger is that the kids have it and just aren't having any symptoms, and then can still be, infect older people because of that. But what if they all have it and have no symptoms? That's good, because maybe that's going to make them immune into the future, right? So I think that's all a positive sign.
How's school been for Amy, for your daughter?
I think good. No cases. I mean, it's different. She finds that it's boring. Even when we enrolled her in gymnastics in the fall, which they had to cancel, she didn't like it as much because there was like adjustments, there was things that they couldn't do, and she found it like it was boring. She's like, I would rather not take it this year. But then they just they canceled it. So activities, super, super important. I know I was a band kid, and I would skip other classes to practice a little bit more.
What instrument did you play?
I played the French horn, and then I went to the clarinet.
Oh my God, those are tough instruments.
Yeah, like a lot of kids that are in band they don't even care about going to school anymore. That's the only thing they look forward to at school, even if they do well at school. But speaking of boring, you know what they're doing before they could play instruments was they were drumming on plastic pails and playing ukuleles, which is something. The band teachers have to think of something, but drumming, when you're used to playing Shostakovich in band and then you're just drumming on a plastic pail, like, can you imagine?
You're doing playing Wipeout. Linda, how have your girls adjusted? I know it seems like a long time, but
how have they adjusted? That's such a great question. I'd say my oldest adjusted very well right off the bat. She's a self-learner, so she could teach anyone here time management and productivity lessons. Like, she's so focused. I've always been admiring of that in her. My youngest last term fell through the cracks, it was a challenge. I think for her, she's very extroverted, and she's the type of kid who, sitting in class, she would have been talking to her buddy and miss what the teacher said, and then has to ask the teacher, and then has to ask another friend for the, what did he say? So to take a kid like that at home, trying to manage what she was supposed to do, it was not happening. So it took some like real effort on my part to get things back on track for this term. So thankfully the school was really good. And when I contacted the school, Kelvin, they were just so supportive, and they were like, you have no idea how many kids are struggling this way. They were like, this is across the board, a very common thing. Kids can't focus. They're depressed. They're really struggling with meaning, like what you were saying, Maureen, like when you remove that meaning and we forget forget sometimes how crucial that development phase of teenage life connecting to your peers is. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be connecting with me. Like, unless I'm driving them to buy Starbucks, like they're not interested in me, you know?
That's exactly it. It's what's the point? It was what's the point of even practicing, though I'm an excellent musician. Why should I practice? I'm not going to be there. Even his university friends in first year university who were like, one was a flute major in wind ensemble. Yeah, I don't even feel like practicing. Why should
a lot of that, what's the point?
And they're already struggling with that anyways, this generation, right? We ask them then, why should I, what could it motivate me in this space?
Of course. So, you know, I mean, this show is always an emphasis on mental health. And I think, you know, Kirsten, you guys always speak so strongly on the peer support. And, you know, I see that in my kids for sure, that when you removed that peer support, it was very quickly impacting mental health. So, you know, I think that's a piece that, you know, I really learned myself that it's so important to facilitate that for them and for myself, you know, like, I mean, this isn't a great peer support thing for me to hear what everyone's dealing with and, you know, to feel like you're not alone, to feel like your struggles are seen and heard. And I think that's, you know, getting back to what we started talking about at the beginning about racism. You know, having these kind of platforms, I'd love to see this platform. You know, it's so great for all of us, but I know you feel this, Tracy. Like, how do you reach more people? Mm-hmm. How do you get more people involved in this dialogue and workshopping these ideas? You know, and feeling that, you know, that support that you can speak uncomfortable things, say, you know, like as Raina was saying, you know, like, let's just talk about it. How do we get more people involved? That's something that I would love to see. And, you know, I was going to ask everyone what they thought of the slogan for the city's Anti-Racism Week. Because we started yesterday, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And I know, Amy, you've been posting about the Anti-Racism Week. What is it? Can you imagine our city without racism? I thought, what were everyone's thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, it's a big loaded question. And we did the kickoff video for it. And it was really interesting listening to the speakers. But more importantly, there was a grade 12 student from Brandon, Alexis, who spoke so openly about her vivid memory of at 14 going away to camp. And she, on one day, was not feeling well, so she stayed back. And when the rest of the girls came back, she found was told that one of the girls called and using her words, that indigenous people, maybe not using the word indigenous, but were dirty and alcoholics, like just very derogatory. And she said, you know what, she didn't think much of it, but she said, I never forgot those words. And she is just now speaking about this and speaking out. But it was, those kind of stories really make you stop and think. And, you know, I think maybe a first lesson is actually stopping and thinking about something before you say anything. And that's, you know, where you go down that slippery slope. But, it was just, she spoke very, very well. And it resonated with her. You know, definitely probably caused her pain, but she's now speaking out, and she leaves that message for more young people to come forward with their stories. So, and she found out too that she wasn't alone, but unfortunately it takes experiences like that, right? That can do a lot of damage, especially to young people. But yeah, so I think maybe that's the first step, right? Is stopping and thinking and listening. But yeah, there's a lot of work to do, for sure. What about you, Amy?
No, I agree. I think there's a lot of work. It takes a lot of listening, compassion, empathy, just wanting to learn. I think it starts with us knowing mm-hmm. what we can do and being speaking up about it and not being afraid to do so.
Yeah.
Right. Like I said before, there's these limiting beliefs that's really hindering my progress, and I'm learning because I want to be a role model for Alyssa, right? Like, mm-hmm. how am I going to have these conversations one day with her if she were to bring it up that, oh, this happened to me? I'm like, oh, well, just accept it. And that's not the way to go, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it takes the school as well. But again, like the school, we don't touch on those subjects. It's not a subject. We talk about math, social studies, English. We don't talk about kindness. We don't talk about compassion. We don't talk about cultures, right?
Yeah.
There's Socialrama, which we do really, really great at embracing like the different cultures, but within the school, how they're being brought up, where they're there 8 hours a day, none of it. And sometimes when they're being bullied, it's not even really properly addressed.
No, no. Kirsten, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Amy. It's amazing the things that you do learn or children do learn in school and what's required and considered essential and the lack of what they learn in school and is not addressed. I find that absolutely shocking. I would love to rewrite the health curriculum and have a huge piece of mental health and, you know, something like skills based for managing emotions, like a DBT type something. But having said that, I have huge faith in this younger generation. My oldest daughter, who's 23, was such a driving force when she went to Vincent Massey. And she was very involved in social justice and because of her work on her graduating year, she actually got awarded Outstanding Youth Role Model with four others in the city by the mayor. And she wasn't the volleyball player or the jock. She fell in with the band kids, right? That was her, and the social justice, and that was the
go block. Nerds go.
Oh, I you know she's like so much cooler than I am, and but. What I wanted to touch on also is when you were telling that story, Tracy, about this young woman who spoke about her first or a solid memory that she has mm-hmm. of racism. I mean, when you think of hearing words like that as an adult, how hurtful they are, and we have this life experience that we're actually somewhat equipped mm-hmm. to manage and navigate like a verbal assault or hearing something hurtful. And then you take these kids that don't have that wealth of life experience. And not only do they have to navigate hurtful words like that, but they're also going back to this online learning right now and what Linda was talking about, her two daughters. And I have two daughters that are so different, somewhat the same, but like so different. You know, I just feel for those kids that I'm not going to say very few, but there's a segment of students that are actually doing just fine and some perhaps even thriving with this online learning. And then there's other kids with this isolation that, you know, not only is their learning suffering, their mental health is suffering huge. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the depth of experience and they're lacking connection. And I just can't wait for things to progress so we can get these kids back in school. You know, hopefully in a typical, more normal way. I'm kind of rambling on here, but I feel I'm so impressed by our younger generation, and right now my heart breaks for them. And I hope the change comes with them. Yeah, yeah.
How about you, Maureen?
Well, yeah, I think that's it. I think they are really active, but they need a purpose. Back to what Linda was saying again, right? So you've got to channel that energy to something, and when there's nothing. And so hanging out in the house is all fine and good. Not if you don't have a good household environment. Can you imagine if you're in an abusive domestic situation mm-hmm. on top of everything else? And doesn't have to be physically abusive, right? Mental abuse is often worse in some ways. But and then to be denied that interaction with your social, like when I was young as a kid, I only wanted to be with my friends. I did not ever want to be with my parents. Sometimes I think this generation's a little different that way, mm-hmm. but still, like, it's weird to have my two grown-up kids, 17, almost 18, and 23, hanging around in the house with us 24/7. Like, that's not good for them, is it?
It's not good for you.
Well, I actually don't mind. Aww. But, well, sometimes I do, but I usually like it. But,
yeah. Well, and I guess that's a whole other conversation. When Amy was talking about things like empathy and all of that not being taught in school, and now with this new bill, and doing away with all of the different school boards and everything and having just one school division. I don't know about only one, but maybe then that's the way, well, it was proof in the pudding with what Maureen and the parents did with their school bands. Maybe, you know, we need to have conversations with the, you know, your MLA or whoever in your constituency about what you would like to be taught, like what is the new curriculum, because it definitely needs to change. We're in the 21st century now, and we all know that you know, there needs to be more Indigenous stories being told, and let's bring in the cultural stories then too, because we are multicultural. Folkorama has 52 different cultural places to go to, so obviously there's at least 52 different communities, cultural communities out there with lots of stories, and then maybe that would start the conversations that we are, the Rana conversations that she wants. And that, you know, I think too, my heart goes out to Alexis's parents, this 17-year-old who probably didn't know how to address what their little girl came home from summer camp that was supposed to be all fun. You know, and I think those are some of the things, those hard conversations as a parent, to give us the tools, right, on how to address those feelings and to address those situations that your children come home crying or feeling bad about, because they're ultimately going to feel bad about themselves first, right? So, I would, and maybe, Linda, what do you think Winnipeg would look like without racism?
Well, I think, Kirsten, you need to get on rewriting the health curriculum.
Yes.
I think that's a good start. Amy, you're going to get on the empathy part.
Yeah.
Right? Maureen's going to have the creativity and the music component. Tracy, you're going to have the storytelling.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
We've got it all right here.
And no more calculus. Why do we need calculus?
Through calculus.
Why? You know, physics, I can understand a little bit, you know, the laws of gravity or whatever, but calculus? No.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. and so really, when you think of it, you know, we really do have what we need here. And, you know, I think teaching communication should start at such a younger age, you know, and teaching all these things we're talking about, how to speak up when you're feeling fear, you know, how do you speak up when you, you know, when you're uncomfortable, teaching empathy, learning through stories, that peer-to-peer support, you know, compassion, and, you know, all of those things would help. And so, you know, when I think of a city without racism, it would look very different. Even just physical. Yeah, we need to teach mental health. We do. We need to teach mental wellness. I think the city would look incredibly different. I think, you know, I mean, talk, you know, when Raina was talking about the conversations that we don't have conversations about the fact that our city is segmented by race in many areas. We just accept it as that's the way it is. That's the way your street looks like. I think a city without racism would look very different and very much more diverse. It would be much richer, much, you know, much, much safer. It would really be safer. So
I love, I love this idea, Linda. You said, what does your street look like? So maybe that's a project for next week's topic. What does your street look like? Maybe, I mean, don't go knocking on everybody's door, but maybe just take a walk down your street and you can tell. And what does your street look like? I think it's, that might be an interesting first step, right? Because we don't, it's very rare now that you get to know your neighbors because, well, I guess maybe it's a little different now because we're not going anywhere. And maybe that might be the first, once we're all vaccinated, we will open our doors and get to know our neighbors. But yeah, that's an interesting thought. Write that down. Well, anyways, really great conversation. And yeah, we're not going to solve all the world's problems. And like I always say, we want to meet more women and men out there that, you know, want to share their own stories, because that's the whole part of the learning process too as well. Oh, and Kristen, before we wrap up, your words of wisdom, because I'm still feeling that, like, for parents out there, and we've talked about this, you know, talking about, let's just say, uncomfortable conversations. What is, like, the first thing that, as a parent, you can do to create that safe and open dialogue with your child?
Oh, wow. You know, just kind of taking the time and finding the space, turning the devices off, and sitting, that's the first step, I think. And, you know, so much can happen out of asking your child, what do you mean by that? So what does that look like to you? Help me understand that. Like, to really kind of go a little deeper and to have those open-ended conversations with them, with your children. And that's where a really interesting in-depth conversation can happen. And one conversation I just want to add that I'm having with families a lot right now, because of the online learning, because of the isolation, because of our COVID world, throw away the social measuring sticks. You know, everyone's flipping through Facebook and thinking, well, this person's off to college, got a scholarship, graduating, driver's license. I mean, like, throw it away. Life can look really beautiful for many people on Facebook and anything you're scrolling. But the reality is, there's no timeline right now for kids. And to approach a child with some compassion and empathy, because it's hard and it's different right now. And not to panic about the social measuring stick and what the neighbor next door is doing. Like, it's just different. And give them that grace with a whole lot of awesome conversation and connection, and the world will be perfect. No, I'm kidding. but everybody's panicking. Parents, I'm hearing, are panicking and adding more pressure and more chaos to the house. And I mean, everybody needs to take a step back, pause, and realize there's no race happening right now. It's just a different world.
Yeah, so true. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much. I mean, those are words of wisdom. Yeah, and definitely, yeah, get rid of the devices that we're all so glued to. Anyways, well, it's Tuesday. March is almost gone. This is like, where has this month gone? Really? Yeah, it's crazy. Bye, Maureen's going bye.
Yeah, it's March. You like March.
Well, thank you so much, ladies, for joining in the conversation. And yes, take a walk down your street and see what your street looks like. And we'll get your reports next week. Great
thank
to see you.
You.
Great to see you guys.
Have a good week.
Tracy.
Yes, bye-bye.
Everyone.
Thanks, Tracy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of ilikehugh.com. Podcast distribution from the Sound Off Media Company.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many rogues that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at AveryRich.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.